You're listening to VCJ, Victoria College Jersey.
Thank you, Tarindu. Okay, so we're on to sound now. Hopefully you remember from lower school that sound is vibrations. Generally, vibrations travelling through the air. Vibrations can't travel through a vacuum because there's nothing to vibrate. So light can travel through a vacuum because it's transmission of energy. Sound can't travel through a vacuum because it relies on things vibrating. There's nothing to vibrate in a vacuum, no sound. So all those space movies where you see things blowing up and you hear things blowing up, all nonsense. You couldn't hear them blowing up because there's nothing to vibrate. Okay. Sound travels through air by a series of compressions and rarefactions. We demonstrate it with a slinky spring, where the compressions where the slinky spring are close together, travel along, and then they're followed by areas where the slinky spring is further apart. They're the rarefactions, compressions and rarefactions. You can set up sound in air by having something moving backwards and forwards, squashing the air in front and then releasing the air in front, setting up those compressions and rarefactions that then travel through. And that's exactly what a loudspeaker does, and I've demonstrated a loudspeaker to you. As you increase the input frequency to the loudspeaker, so you increase the pitch of the sound being produced. As you increase the amplitude of the electricity to the loudspeaker, you increase the loudness of the sound being produced. So you have pitch and you have loudness. Pitch goes up and down as frequency goes up and down. Loudness goes up and down as amplitude goes up and down. Hopefully you remember that frequency is 1 over the time it takes for one complete cycle. So 1 over the time for one complete compression and refraction to go through. That gives you the frequency, and amplitude is measured from the centre to the top of the wave when you see it on an oscilloscope screen. Okay, there's not a lot more to sound than that, to be brutally honest. Sound is a wave, so it behaves very like light in that it can be reflected. It can be reflected off curved mirrors and focused down to a point. And they actually used those properties of sound during the early part of the Second World War. They had big concrete curved mirrors. The sound reflected off them. Somebody stood and listened. And that way they could hear the German bombers coming early. So it'll behaves very like light in a lot of ways. The difference is that that wave that I demonstrated with the slinky spring is called a longitudinal wave, whereas light is travelling in a more like a sine wave, which is called a transverse wave. In solids, it's possible for sound to travel as either a transverse wave or a longitudinal wave. In liquids and in air, sound can only travel as a longitudinal wave. It's just one of them things that you have to know. It's possible to travel as a transverse wave within solids because each particle within the solid is joined together. So if they go out, they get pulled back. In fluids, can't do that. Can, however, travel as a transverse wave along the surface of a fluid. So a water wave is a transverse wave, but that's along the surface. Through the centre of the fluid, it can't travel as a transverse wave. It can only travel as a longitudinal wave. Right, don't know that's likely to turn up in the exam much, but it's just possible that it might. Right, quality of a note. Quality of a note depends on how close to a sine wave it is. If it's a perfect sine wave, it's a perfect note. If it's got lots of other wiggles mixed in with the sine wave, then it's no longer perfect. But as we discovered when we did it with the loudspeaker and we delivered it perfect sine waves, we actually really don't enjoy listening to perfect notes. We want to listen to notes that are much more complicated than that, probably because our ears have evolved to listen to our speech, and our speech is extremely complicated. So perfect notes actually sound really horrible to us. And we want to listen to something with a lot more complication going on there. And the body of a musical instrument does two things. It resonates with the central frequency of the string or whatever it happens to be. And in resonating, makes it louder. So it increases the volume of the plucked string. Or the guitar body increases the volume of the plucked string. But it also adds the other frequencies, the complication that we like to be able to hear. and therefore they talk about, you know, fabulous violins that are produce really warm sound, and you know about Stradivarius violins costing millions and millions of pounds because they produce a really warm sound. They add a complexity to the sound that we find extraordinarily pleasant. But the main job that the body of the instrument is doing is it's increasing the loudness. It's resonating with the sound and increasing its loudness. Okay, that's it for sound. Not a lot more to sound. What are we else? Okay, so we go on to ultrasound. In the same way that you have ultraviolet and infrared, you've got ultrasound and infrasound. Ultrasound is above the limit of human hearing. Just because we can't hear it anymore doesn't mean there's not sound there. It's just that our hearing apparatus, at its best, only goes up to 20,000 hertz or 20 kilohertz. A hertz, unit of frequency, written, the unit is written H, small z, capital H, small z. Kilohertz, thousands of hertz, small k, capital H, small z, kilohertz. So our hearing goes up to 20 kilohertz or 20,000 hertz and down to something like 30 hertz. So below 30 hertz, we can't hear that, that's infrasound. Above 20,000 hertz, we can't hear that, that's ultrasound. Ultrasound has a number of uses. You're all aware of the uses of ultrasound for looking at babies inside pregnant mothers. And that's because the ultrasound will reflect off every change in density. Every surface where there's a change in density, some of the ultrasound will reflect. And if the changes in density aren't especially abrupt, only some of the ultrasound will reflect. If they're very abrupt, if it's air going into solid, that's very abrupt, all of the ultrasound reflects. But if they're only gradual, if they're only small changes, like going from the amniotic fluid within the body to the baby itself, that's a smallish change, and only some of the ultrasound will reflect. So you get ultrasound reflecting off the front of the baby, you get ultrasound reflecting off the back of the baby, and you get ultrasound reflecting off the spine of the baby, because again, that's a bit denser, so you get a reflection off there. And what the ultrasound scanner does is it puts all those partial reflections together by measuring the time between the pulse going out and the pulse coming back, knowing the speed of sound within the particular liquid involved. It can assemble a picture by saying, well, there's a reflection there, so there must be a surface there. There's a reflection there, so there must be a surface there. And it assembles a picture of the baby within the body. And it's not just used for babies. It's used for lots of soft tissue problems, so bladder problems. There's no bones there, so you can't x-ray it. So you use ultrasound to have a look at it. Okay, ultrasound uses in medical scanners. Other uses of ultrasound, well, there's uses of ultrasound for ultrasound cleaning. Ultrasound, because the waves of ultrasound are small, higher frequency, smaller wave. Because the waves in frequency, the waves at very high frequency ultrasound are very small. They're actually the same kind of size as the particles of dirt that you're looking to break up on things. So they're very good at breaking the particles of dirt up because they're the right size. So if you want to have something very delicate, you want cleaning, you can put it in a liquid bath and hit it with ultrasound, and the ultrasound will break up the particles on the surface without having to rub at the surface. And if it's a delicate surface, the last thing you want to do is rub at it. So ultrasound, very useful for cleaning delicate items. And the example of ultrasound that turns up in the exams is flaws in metal. If you've got a crack forming inside a piece of metalwork, if it's a strut of an aeroplane, you need to know that crack's there, otherwise you're in big trouble. So you've got to have a way of finding it. If you put a burst of ultrasound in one end, it will not only reflect off the other end, but it will also partially reflect off any cracks. So the cracks show up as partial reflections. You can get them to appear on an oscilloscope screen. And you can work out how deep in the bit of metal they are by the time for the ultrasound to pass from one end. You can work out how far in they are by looking at the ratio of the time it takes for the cracks to come back compared to the ratio of time for it time to take for it to come back from the very far end. Well, I'm going to do all that again. You can work out how far into the piece of metal the cracks are by looking at the ratio of the time of the pulse to come back from the crack compared to the ratio of the time of the pulse to come back from the far end. So if you know how far away the far end is, then you just multiply that by that ratio and you'll get how far away each crack is. And there's a question about that on page 249 in your textbooks. Something very like that question has turned up in exams. Remember, if you're being asked to calculate distances, though, based on any travelling of sound, don't forget that if the receiver is next to the transmitter, you've calculated the distance for it to get there and back again. Okay, there and back again. So if you've worked out the distance just based on speed and time, you've worked out twice the distance. You've got to halve it. If you do what I suggested for the one with the cracks, and you've worked it out based on a ratio, then it doesn't matter. But if you've worked it out basically on purely on speed and sound, then you've worked out twice the distance, how long it took from that to get there and to come back again. So don't forget to halve it. But do look at that question on page 249. Do make sure you're able to do that, because something very like that does tend to turn up in exams. Okay. And I think that be that for sound and light. Cool, that didn't take long, did it? Well, that only took about 10 minutes. Very little to sound and light. Very little to sound and ultrasound. They didn't take long at all. The light's a lot harder. There's always going to be a question where you've got to draw a ray diagram, so make sure you know how to draw those ray diagrams. But sound, there'll probably be something on the uses of ultrasound. There may not be a whole lot more turning up in the exam.